Welcome everyone to Talking Shop Down Under. This is your host, Richard Banks, and for this particular episode, we're travelling all the way across the Tasman. To the long, cloudy Isle of New Zealand. How are you guys going?
Pretty good, mate.
I'm actually going to get you to introduce yourselves as well. I just want to hear that Kiwi accent come first.
I'm not having fish and chips for dinner tonight, though.
It's only one Kiwi accent.
No, I'm sure there's a bit of Kiwi working its way into yours as well. It's irresistible.
You should do my kids.
See, there you go. I just heard you say cuds.
Oh, stop. No.
All right, so Ian Randall and Ben Gracewood, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. Now, for the listeners, for their auditory pleasure, would you like to introduce yourselves? So they know who belongs to which particular voice.
Okay, I'll go first then. I'm Ben Gracewood, at NZBen on Twitter. I'm a solution architect with a little company called Intergen in New Zealand. I call myself a recovering manager. I used to be a manager. Now I'm doing what I like, which is developing software.
Over to you. Been there. Know that one. And Ian. Hello, Ian. This is your chance.
Has he dropped off?
Sorry. Can you edit this out?
He fell asleep already. He was so enthralled with the podcast. He went, oh, God.
Ben completely cut out, and I was hoping it was me and not him. Sorry.
It's you.
So it's my turn. I'm Ian Randall. I work for a company called Datacom in Auckland. I'm a developer, I guess, solution architect, business analyst, T-boy. You kind of do what you get told to do at Datacom. It's a bit of everything. So I'm Kiwi Pom on Twitter, and don't follow me because I swear too much.
Hang on, I'm just going to quickly open the tweet stream and see what you're saying right now. Oh, don't say that. It's terrible. So childish jokes aside, now we wanted to get you guys on to talk about something you've kicked off over there, or that you're about to kick off. For some reason, you've decided to, drive sticks into your eyeballs and run a conference of some sort.
Oh, yes. There was a fantastic article that someone tweeted recently that about how running conferences is not a way to get famous and make money. But my response to that was, if it breaks even and produces a lot of awesome, then it's been a success. So we're not in it for the money. We're in it for the awesome. And Ian can tell you what it is.
Yeah, totally. It started off about a year ago. Tech Ed New Zealand. I was just stood at the back of a 400 session, and I was watching the amount of people queuing out the back that couldn't get into this really deep technical talk, and it just occurred to me that there's a real appetite for mind meltingly good content. Mm-hmm. And I just said to Ben, hey, you know what? We should have a whole day just of this. And you have to skip forward about 6 months. And we just kind of looked at each other and went, should we do it then? It's like, yeah, all right then.
I guess the backstory in between times, I kicked off a conference at, when I was working at Datacom, a conference called DevCamp, which was mainly internal with a few external people, weekend away, unconference, talking about what you want. And again, from that unconference, the sessions that people wanted to do was to talk to each other about stupidly complex coding problems and coding solutions, regardless of whether they are related to work of the day. Another inkling that maybe something like this would work. It's called Code Mania. You can visit the website codemania.co.nz. Mm-hmm. And the idea is a conference for software developers. So there is no other qualifier than that. It's not a web conference. It's not a Microsoft conference. It's not a Java conference. It's a conference about and for and by software developers. Yeah.
And that's fundamentally it. And we've kind of taken the view that, okay, we happen to be a pair of Microsofties, but that's really irrelevant. And we've got Ruby guys, Java guys, Microsoft guys. We've got an iOS guy, and we've invited them all in to talk about coming up with really good solutions to really gnarly problems, and that kind of stuff tends to be technology agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know about you, Richard, or and I know Ian feels the same way, but sitting in a session, a technical session, about something you don't necessarily know about is still, or you're not going to use, is still incredibly interesting, and you can usually take away some stuff from that that's useful in your day job. So that's the plan, is a broad enough base that people will either, look at the Rails talks and think, well, okay, that's interesting, that's stuff I hadn't actually known before, or the way that things are starting to coalesce more these days, coalesce around JavaScript or coalesce around MVC pattern without necessarily needing to know or needing to be using the actual platform that it's on.
Yeah, I think the fact that we're trying to solve, in some cases, the same problem with different tools just helps you look at the problem from different angles. But there's also certain technologies where you look at the problem they're trying to solve and you go, that's so easy to do in that particular, tool set or whatever else, and then you look at what you're trying to do
with the server.
Huh? Yeah, why not?
There's a particularly venomous article going around at the moment about that, isn't there? Was it Node.js is cancer or something? Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
I'll have to try and find the link for you. Somebody that just rants on it for about, three or four paragraphs, and then he writes, TLDR, this isn't very nice, I won't use it.
What, he doesn't like Node, or he doesn't like JavaScript?
Doesn't like either.
God.
Excellent. Okay, so worth listening to. Not.
Yes.
So that's probably not the attitude you want, right?
No, completely. No.
Yes and no. I mean, get that guy along to sort of have a look at the different flavors and work out maybe why he doesn't like it. It'll be, that's the sort of thing. I'm all up for an argument.
So he'll be that guy standing up the back of the room with his arms folded and a grumpy expression on his face going, rah, 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 rah. You kids these days.
So if you go to the website, you'll see that it's got a really kind of a wrestling theme. We've kind of got this fun, festive, combative theme going through the site. So no, he won't be allowed to stand at the back with his arms folded. We're going to drag him on the stage and force him to sweat the air. Absolutely, yeah.
No, I must admit, that site is spectacular.
Thank you. We have to credit a company called Litawal with it. If you go to the bottom of the site and click on Graphics By, they're a bunch of a really cool company in Auckland who are really keen to help out. So they've helped us with it. There's also some patented Ben Grace with JavaScript behind there. the Parallax was some of the most fun I've had with layout and JavaScript for a while. You should have a look. But
yeah, it's very cool because the wrestlers on the side look like they start in a ring kind of thing, but then they've been thrown out of the ring and then they just fall down the screen as you scroll. And it's Nacho Libre, fantastic.
It's pretty nifty, and you'd be surprised how excited one developer can get when he actually gets a little light to flicker on the side of the page.
And which one developer is that?
That would be Mr. Grace.
Yeah.
This is the tickets logo, like the flicker of neon.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's quite funny, right? You hear these stories about Flash is dead and this sort of thing, and I haven't built a lot of websites in my time. I've done a bit of JavaScript, but realizing what you can do these days, Jesus Christ, why would you bother with Flash?
Yeah, or Silverlight for that matter.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Well, Silverlight for the web, I should say.
Yeah, contentious.
Well, it's still there on Phone 7, right?
Oh, yeah, and Windows 8, big time. This is the sore point with Mr. Randall that Windows 8's XAML is based off Silverlight rather than WPF, but we can talk about that later if you want.
Is there a difference?
I come at XAML from Silverlight. Ian comes at XAML from WPF, and I thought the same thing. I thought, oh, yeah, whatever, all the same. And then I had to write a WPF app. And I didn't have anything to do with Visual State. I didn't have 3D transforms and a bunch of other stuff I didn't have. And I was moaning and groaning. And then Ian pointed out there's a bunch of things WPF has that Silverlight doesn't. Triggers and some other bits and pieces. But, I poo-poo that. Silverlight's better.
WPF's been dead for a while, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, this is an interesting thing is doing some digging around at Build and asking the right people, then it appears that, yes, the XAML tooling or the XAML kind of namespaces on top of WinRT are built from Silverlight as opposed to WPF. So you don't, you have visual state managers and 3D transforms, but you don't have triggers. I'm yet to confirm that in detail, but that's what I've been told by as many people as I can ask. So that's an interesting thought.
It does make sense.
Yeah, I mean, you think given the attention paid to Silverlight versus WPF over the last, like you say, a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
I imagine it's the one that's more up to date or has had more attention paid to it.
And also, if you're coming from a Phone 7 developer background,
yes,
then it's going to be easier to transfer that knowledge across. So there's a lot more Silverlight and Phone 7 devs than there are WPF devs.
Yeah,
there's actually more WinForms devs than there are WPF devs.
Sad, isn't it? Makes me cry. Because it is a beautiful piece of technology, and it always has been. And I just think I heard Billy Hollis described it best the other day. He said, "Yeah, it's a bit of a steep hill to climb, but once you get to the top, it's an absolutely beautiful view." And that's kind of how I feel with WPF. It's a fantastic piece of technology, but it's pretty tough to get there. It's a bit of a learning cliff, and so many people just run into the face of it and they fall back down again, and they don't bother trying to climb it. And
I have to agree. I mean, I haven't done a lot of WPF, but XAML as a toolset and as a language, I have never been more productive than I have been building apps for Windows Phone. But I mean, that's also partly to do with the cut down. The cut-down interface and the sandbox or the trusted environment as well. You don't really have to think twice about security and state and that sort of stuff because it's all just there for you. Found that very productive.
So, Ben, you were at Build, as you were saying.
Yes.
In terms of what you saw, cutting through, now it's been, more than a couple of weeks since it's all been over and the hype's died down a little bit and we're now all getting on with trying to figure out what this means for us. What's your take on the whole WinRT versus .NET versus whatever, just the direction the platform's heading in?
So a couple of things. So my first impression after that, the keynotes on the first day was I was desperately looking for some disappointment because I was expecting to be disappointed. I was expecting, it to be all HTML or no HTML or whatever. But the more and more I looked at it, the more I thought about it, it's kind of a genuine have your cake and eat it too situation. You can build you can build something that runs on Windows 7, it'll run fine on Windows 8, no problem at all. You can also build
legacy mode.
Yes, correct. There's no way that Microsoft is going to say you can't run Xs, right? So
still run their DOS applications.
Absolutely. And if you then choose to build something new, then you can build it in HTML or you can build it in C++ or C#, and you can build it in XAML on C++. And there's just so much option. And I'm really trying to find the bad side to all of this. And I think maybe people who haven't done phone development would see the whole App Store and Win8 lockdown is a bad side. But again, the productivity in a platform like that where you are restricted by what you can do, your app is suspended or killed, there's no background processing, but the background tasks are there for you. So things like the background download agent, holy crap, you don't have to deal with anything to do with connectivity or pause resume or range headers on HTTP or anything like that. It just does it all for you. It's gorgeous.
So what sort of – with the Windows – the Metro part of it, or the whatever they're calling that now, the new UI.
Metro-style apps.
Yeah, that thing. With their beautifully coiffed hair. Then do you think that design's going to filter down to all the other apps that we develop, or is this just – is Metro going to be the new Battleship Grey?
Yeah, well, the thing – playing with the tablet – which again is not a production device, and it's quite a weird device being, it's basically laptop spec hardware and a slate. I can see, and I'd probably stake a lot of money on the fact there will be a version of Windows that comes out that is just Metro. It doesn't have legacy in it. Now, I don't know whether that's going to be an ARM tablet or what, but I think it makes a lot of sense. Like, the Metro part of Windows 8 feels as good or better than an iPad. Right? When we know how well the iPad's done.
Mm-hmm.
It feels a little bit better than iPad because of the fact you've got all these, you can run two apps side by side in the I don't know what even they call it, the, you know, the sort of semi-multitasking mode. You've got the tiles, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
So I think what we'll find is, yes, there'll be a demand for good apps to come out in Metro, in a Metro style. And, you know, some app developers will do that themselves. Microsoft will do the same thing they did with Windows Phone, which is, you know, pay the top apps to port.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll just be a progressive, progressively you saw, the old style Windows, what was it? You know, Windows ancient apps come up to Win32 apps, and you kind of could see the difference between the two as XP and Windows 2000 and stuff got more popular.
So we're going to see the new gold rush, effectively, kind of like, I suppose, when all the iPad apps, or when the iPad was announced, everyone was going, oh, iPad apps, and they basically take their existing apps and double the size of them and call them an iPad app and charge $3 extra. But are we going to see that sort of land grab for a Windows 8 app store?
I think so. I think you will. I mean, and again, if you... what we're seeing is a very nerdy, very developer-centric view of Windows 8, and that's exactly what it is, you know, build as a developer conference.
Mm-hmm.
But when we start seeing consumer Windows 8 tablets come out, they won't be advertising or touching the legacy side of Windows 8. You know, they'll be marketing it purely on the Metro stuff. And so, yes, all, you know, anyone who wants to be in there to make money on selling apps is going to have to be building Metro apps.
Okay, so question for both of you: if you were midstream of developing a new application, and you targeted Silverlight because you thought, you know, WPS dead, but Silverlight's getting plenty of love. There's Silverlight 5 coming, so let's hit Silverlight as our application development platform. And you say, you know, 2-3 months into it, then Build comes along, and then what do? Do you say, well, let's now try and write this as a Metro app, or do you continue down the Silverlight path?
I mean, I'd port it to Metro if it was Silverlight app, because the port should be fairly straightforward. Design notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm sort of coming at the whole Windows 8 from a subtly different space. Look, I saw it from afar. I didn't go there, and I wasn't involved in the buzz, and I probably haven't been to as many of the sessions as Ben has. But from all the way over here, it just Windows 8. Doesn't look like it's going to impact on my life as a corporate developer just yet. I feel like I write .NET apps now, whether that's against Silverlight or WPF or whether it's ASP.NET MVC, but I'm a .NET developer now. I don't see my life as an enterprise developer changing to Windows WinRT in the near or medium future, frankly.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that's why Sinofsky made the point about the garage developers and the after hours developers as well. I think that's where they see some of the growth coming from.
So that point was what exactly?
Well, was it Barmer's talk where he said, you know, we want all developers, we want developers who are, you know, we want corporate developers, we want developers who are developing, you know, enterprise apps in their day jobs, but developing, want to develop tablet apps in their evenings. And that's, I think, where a lot of iPhone growth came from as well, iPhone dev growth. I know personally a few iPhone developers who got their start coding after hours and then making a bit of cash off the App Store.
So if we're doing corporate apps, we're not going to be doing Metro apps anyway, because aren't they supposedly only distributable via the store?
No, there will be a enterprise distribution model as well.
What a AD group policy push kind of thing.
Yeah, and unsure of how they're going to deal with it, but yeah, it'll be you put a cert on your devices or something of the sort that allows you to install those apps. Yeah, and I mean I was skeptical too. I mean, the funny thing is working with a client at Intigen, a few months ago, there was actually a specific use case where I could see this thing working. You know, the specific thing was they were desperate for a sexy tablet with a sexy, you know, sort of sales app that they could put in front of clients to do this sort of thing, but they didn't want to lose the full functionality of their Outlook and CRM and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the use case I can see, where you might write a front end on top of a service, that is nice for the users, but they don't have to compromise if they've got a tablet with everything else on it.
Okay.
I also think it makes – I mean, it does – I've picked up – Ben brought a tablet back from the conference, and I sort of picked that up and I've played it and pressed it, and it's fantastic, and it's smooth, and it's beautiful. I've also done the dev thing, and I've put it on a VM on my laptop, and it's not quite.
Well, that's because the VM's not running with the hardware acceleration.
Yeah, it is. I did put it on some hardware natively as well, and it's slightly better. But it is Metro is optimized for touch. There's just no two ways about it. They've put this piece of software out and said, "Here, you can touch it, and it's you know, this is how you use it." So you know, I'm just thinking the norm. New Zealand's pretty conservative. We go into banking, into insurance, these kind of industries. I just don't see them dropping keyboards and mice and going for this brand new, brave new world with tablets and touch and stuff. Maybe I'm being a bit negative.
No, you're not. They need to finish that story. Eh? They're doing to really answer the question around what is the, you know, the desktop, you know, what does Metro on the desktop look like and how does that work?
So I've played with it a bit myself. I've thrown it on a laptop and done the bootable VHD thing. And once you throw the drivers on, you get the scroll wheels going and the, you know, multi-touch on your notepad with the trackpads. Then it's not too bad. It's, you know, run the scroll wheel, start typing, away you go. The shutting down or logging off is a bit of a pain because you've got to go one corner and then the other corner.
Like, what the what?
but just, you know, hitting the Windows key and start typing as you would normally.
Yes.
Or hit Windows and then scroll wheel to move up and down. It's not too bad.
And some of the charms and contracts and things are just incredibly slick. You know, I was talking to a guy who basically got a Dropbox, Mr. Benj, who got a Dropbox, sort of file picker up and running inside of the conference because just simply that the file picker contract is. You know, what do you want to get? Give me a stream back, and it's done. So, in terms of development, all you got to write is the thing to find your stream and pass it back, and it's really, really well thought out.
Yes, so those contracts are actually probably a big bonus in terms of putting apps together.
Absolutely, interop and stuff. You know, it's surprisingly easy. You know, you subscribe and say, I want to deal with search, and you know, you get an event that says, here's a new search with a string in it. You're away. Do whatever you want from there. Yeah.
Very nice. All right, so let's change track a little bit and move away from Build back to the sunny shores of New Zealand, or at least the shores of New Zealand.
It's not been too sunny today, mate, no.
Any day.
You promised.
I promise. Okay. So when you look past the sheep and out to the clouds. Behave, Richard. How's the community there? So you're putting this conference together, Codemania, and you're targeting not just the .NET Microsoft space but also the Java space and the JavaScript and the Ruby and everything else. How have you gone getting those contacts and knowing who to talk to and trying to get the word around within the New Zealand dev community?
Do you want me to go with that one?
Yeah, it's a bloody good question, eh? Well, I'll talk to the Microsoft bit, and you can do everything else. So within certainly within Auckland and within New Zealand, the MS communities is fairly prevalent. And Ben and I are both sort of in the community. Ben's an MVP, and we both do plenty of speaking. And I actually run the Silverlight and Mobile Development Group in Auckland with a guy called Keith. So we know a lot of these people anyway. We know who the good speakers are. Mm-hmm. But we've actually sort of reached out. We actually want to make this a world-class conference. So we actually reached out to people that we know to be world-class Microsoft speakers. And we've invited a couple of people down, and we're pretty hopeful that we're going to get some good results. We've got a guy that you should know, and your listeners of this show should know. Got Damian Edwards is going to come and talk for us.
Damo.
Yeah, so we're absolutely delighted to get him on board. It's a massive coup for our little indie conference that he'll come and talk for us. But in terms of getting good Java developers, it's been a bit of an issue. I mean, feel free to jump in, Ben.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is I probably got some faces from Datacom Dev Camp where I, again, did the same thing. Specifically went out and got people at the top of their game and other languages to come and talk to us. But also, I think the New Zealand tech community is actually, not necessarily because it's small, but it just seems to be very close-knit and very collegial regardless of your platform. Mm-hmm. People are, you know, there's polite ribbing that goes on or impolite trolling on Twitter. It's quite a bit of fun sometimes. But the startup guys, you know, the Ruby guys, the Java guys, the web guys will happily talk together and give each other some shit. But with respect, you know, knowing each other, people at the top of their game as well. So it's kind of quite easy to get into that community and discover other people. And through that, you know, there's a guy, Michael Koziarski, who's coming to speak. He's one of the Rails core team members.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so we're hoping to get a bit of an MVC conversation going on between him and some of the MVC guys. And again, the iOS community in New Zealand is going great guns. You know, there's a couple of guys that have made millions from the iOS type stuff. And I don't know, just I tend to quite happily move in the agnostic circles. There's a really good web meetup in Auckland, which is, you know, it's about 200 people every month that come along and listen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's big. And again, that's completely language and platform agnostic. It's just webby stuff. And so through that, you know, I've met quite a few JavaScript, Java, you know, HTML guys, Ruby guys. So it's sort of, I don't know whether... I haven't spent a lot of time in the Sydney or the Australian community, so I'm not sure whether it's maybe easier to get the cross-platform stuff going in New Zealand because the community is smaller.
Do you have issues with North and South Island or at all?
No, not really. I mean, apart from the distance.
Right, yeah.
And the reality is that the bulk of software would happen just in terms of geography. It would happen in the North Island because the two main centres would be Wellington and Auckland. Mm-hmm. There's great packages of development happening in the South Island, but in terms of numbers of devs, that you'd find that predominantly there's a lot of enterprise stuff happening in Auckland. There's a lot of government stuff happening in Wellington, and those would be the two main sort of dev centers.
There's also a surprising amount of startup and web stuff happening in Wellington. I mean, I don't know if you've heard of Webstock, but it's a ripper conference that some people started in Wellington a few years back, and they've just been getting, you know, incredible speaker lineups coming over, speaker lineups that you'd be happy to see in the USA. And they're a bit of an inspiration, to tell you the truth. You know, they've just really focused on running a good conference with good design and good speakers.
Yeah. So what are some of the logistics that you have to consider for those who, you know, haven't ever peeked behind the curtain?
I should find the link for you, but there was an article that went through about how people think running a conference is a way to make tons of money because you look at a, you know, a 3-day conference
and get all the chicks, right?
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know, three-day conference.
People down the street.
1,000 people, $1,000 a head, and that's $1 million. Wow, that's a lot of money, but you can really quickly burn through that money. You know, just looking at things like getting a good AV set up, because you think of conferences you've been to that you've enjoyed. You know, we don't want a pokey office data projector on a table at the front. We don't get proper AV, proper you know, lapel mics and all this sort of stuff. You know, proper catering or a decent meal for people to talk around, this sort of stuff. And mm-hmm. It really just starts to add up. But look, I mean, having done the DevCamp conferences, once you get people there on the day, things seem to fall together pretty well as long as you got everything lined up. So focusing on the speaker list and things that you as a coder would enjoy seeing, I think has half the battle.
And then just a decent network connection.
Yeah, this is true.
The curse of every tech conference.
The curse of Wi-Fi. I mean, having gone to build and the Wi-Fi just got hammered to death there, I sort of don't feel so bad anymore. So. Yeah.
All right. So what are some of the other things you guys are involved in? Obviously, you've got the Silverlight group.
Yeah, we run Slammed, Silverlight and Mobile Development. We run that sort of once a month. We get just try to run it a bit more collegial than the average user group. We try to do less kind of one guy standing at the front waving arms around, and we try to do a bit more sort of interactive, some chat sessions and. So it'll be interesting what direction that group takes following on from Build, whether, you know, continue to be a XAML first group, but whether it will continue to be a Silverlight group remains to be seen, I guess.
And Ben, anything else other than obviously the web one that you mentioned before?
I guess Intergen does a bunch of what they call Twilight sessions, which are, you know, after-hour sessions. I'm running a few of those on Windows 8 coming up. Also some Windows Phone 7 training for students through, you know, alongside Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
and hopefully landing some Windows 8 and Windows Phone 7 dev stuff as well. At Intigen, my role involves a lot of work with Redmond, building demos and interesting, fun stuff for them. Stuff I can't talk about. I wish I could. Yeah. Oh, there'll be something coming out pretty soon, which I think we can talk about, which is actually very, very funky. I'm quite proud of having put it together. So hopefully we can.
So if I promise not to publish this episode before, then you'll be coming.
No, we don't know a date that it's coming out yet. But, it's good fun. It's good fun. Yeah.
So I should mention for the listeners more than anything else that apart from the Codemania conference, the Alt.net Open Spaces conference, so there's YAO coming up in Melbourne, and off the back of that, Jimmy on Twitter, is organizing an Open Spaces conference for the Alt.net types and anyone else who wants to come along, obviously, and the site for that is now up and easy enough to find. We'll just put it in the show notes and everything else. But December 3 is the date for that one. So if you're in Australia and in Melbourne particularly, then obviously go to the site and put your name down, register your interest and so forth as well. So it's conferences everywhere.
Sounds fun.
And Yale conferences as well, obviously. If you want to go to the Yale conferences, that's well worth doing as well because there's a good bunch of speakers coming to them too. All right, guys, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Richard.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. We will catch you on the next episode of Talking Shop Down Under. And as usual, until then, happy coding. We'll see you guys later. Visit talkingshopdownunder.com for previous shows or to subscribe to the feed. Your feedback is always very much appreciated, so get in touch and let us know what you're thinking. Reviews can be left on iTunes or the Zoom Marketplace. Email can be sent to mail@talkingshopdownunder.com and tweets to @talking_shop. That's it for now. Show's over. Go home, people. Go home.